episode 214 of the Cricket Her Weekly. We spent yesterday, Saturday, at our match in the Rachel Hay-Hovland Trophy, Southern Vipers v Northern Diamonds, at the recently renamed Utilita Bowl, no longer the Aegeus Bowl. I had to keep watching myself as we were there yesterday to not give it the wrong name and be chucked out of the ground for not conforming to the sponsors' regulations. And they did get in a match, but not quite the full 50 overs for both teams. Unfortunately, rain curtailed things, and this is what it looked like by the end of the day.
Yeah, it was a bit wet, but it was great to get the end of the day. We had to get the opportunity to meet Deirdre. We can see Deirdre here in our background picture. A long-term Southern Vipers fan. She's been going to the games for a lot of years. So lovely to see her there supporting the team. Deirdre Raff, right here.
You mean the seagull?
Yeah.
Why Deirdre?
Suppose her parents like the name Deirdre. Honestly,
you just get more bonkers. So, apologies to viewers there, who presumably, like me, were wondering who on earth you were talking about. Anyway, so current standings in the Rachel Hay-Hovland Trophy after the third round of matches was played yesterday. So South East Stars at the top with three wins from three matches with 13 points. But just behind them are Vipers, who we saw yesterday, who are in second place with 10 points. And Sunrisers also on 10, but with a worse net run rate. Bringing up the rear, the Blaze, who currently have no points, zero wins from three games, which is... It's a bit of a weird one, Sid, because obviously the Blaze were kind of they moved at the start of last season, didn't they? And previously they'd been the Lightning, and the Lightning had never been particularly successful. And then the Blaze, all kinds of terrible puns about Blaze of Glory and starting the season in a Blaze of Glory. I've just said it, but. They actually got to finals day of the Charlotte Edwards Cup, didn't they? So they had a really brilliant start to last season, and then it tailed off a little bit. And now it's basically the same set of players, although obviously they haven't got Tammy Beaumont and they haven't got Natsi LeBrunt at the moment. But they just seem to be nowhere, and they've had some really bad performances. It's not just been losing; it's actually been really bad losses.
Yeah, I mean, their batting's been really struggling, hasn't it? I mean, they talk in football about kind of new manager bounce. And I wonder if that's a little bit of what's happened here. There was a slightly different management team, but more importantly, they moved grounds. Mm. And obviously, you know, that gave them a bit of a fillip. And they did have a very good start to last season. They kind of were clinging on by their kind of fingernails at the end and did kind of miss out on first place. They got overhauled by Vipers to miss out on the direct qualification for the final in the RHF. And it just seems to have all toppled over from here. I mean, they're also missing the Brightes at the moment,
who are
playing for Scotland in the World Cup qualifiers. They could really have done with them back. It's going to be very interesting actually next year to see whether the counties start clamping down more on stuff like that, isn't it? Because in the men's county system, you often see that people like the Brightes are told by their men's counties, you know, sorry, you can't play that international. Your primary commitment is to your county here, and you don't get to go. So,
haven't seen that so far so much in women's cricket because I think that there's been more of a feeling of kind of cooperation, and Scotland really need all of its top players. But actually, when it comes down to the counties being very much in charge and feeling that they're paying players' salaries, then I just wonder whether they're going to become a bit harsher.
Might all be a little bit different, yeah. But at the moment, you know, they are missing some crucial players. And Tammy Beaumont scored a load of runs for them in the beginning of last season. Nat Siver, she didn't play an awful lot of games, but the games she did play, she had a big impact. Mm. I think we saw Nat Siver play for the Blaze against the Stars, didn't we, at the beginning of last season. Her first game back, and she had a big impact on that game. So between all that, you know, they're just like lacking any batting power at all, and that's been their problem, right? They've been collapsing with the bat.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, no kind of bowling is going to be able to make up for you getting bowled out for less than 100.
And I think in relation to the Project Darwin changes that we're going to see, we've talked about coaches auditioning for their jobs, and players to some extent auditioning for contracts, but it strikes me that some of these teams are actually auditioning as teams, as brands. You know, are you going to want to move and play for a team who in the previous season has been really bad? And you know, no player wants to join the sinking ship.
That's a really interesting point, Raf, and it pertains to people like Bess Heath, because a few people have mentioned this actually, that about Bess Heath, for instance. You know, does Bess Heath stay with Yorkshire? Does she move up to Durham? She's currently still living in Derbyshire, I think. So she's actually nearest side is the Blaze.
Yeah.
And you know, so there's definitely a reason why she might go in that direction. But on the other hand, if the Blaze feel like a sinking ship, then maybe she will try and find other options.
Yeah, and with somebody like her, there is very much going to be player agency.
Yeah, there will be options.
You know, some players might be not kind of considered in the top echelons and will be seeking out counties. But for a player like Bess Heath, she's going to be in demand.
Yeah,
and so
absolutely.
That's going to lead to an uneven start for teams like, well, you know, we think that the Blaze players want to keep the Blaze name, but will they want to keep the Blaze name if they have a bad... a bad run this season. So whatever the Blaze turns into, Nottinghamshire Women, are they going to start off at a disadvantage here?
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting question as the season evolves, who these players end up signing for, and you know, and when these things get announced. Well, that's also going to be quite interesting.
Yeah,
when a team's going to appear, because the new clubs will be under pressure to announce the players, won't they?
Their
marketing
we've
teams
signed
will be like, we want to announce that we've signed these people, and there might be other people that...
I would guess that the ECB will maybe have some input into that. Will they consider it appropriate for, you know, because you've talked in previous episodes about a player playing for one team against potentially their new team. Is it appropriate to announce that they're going to be moving to that team ahead of that match, for example?
Lots of interesting
very
questions.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Should we talk a bit about the Vipers v Diamonds game, though, Sid? Because, again, probably two of the stronger teams in the competition. We've been quite lucky because the two matches we've seen so far have been with basically some of the stronger teams. Diamonds were basically pretty much outplayed, though, weren't they? By a strong Vipers team that did have Maya Boucher and Charlie Dean available.
They did have Maya Boucher and Charlie Dean available. Obviously, we're expecting them to be not available for Vipers players for a large chunk of the season because they're going to be playing for England. I think the really good news for Vipers this time was that Ella McCracken, put in a really solid innings of 80-odd. And, you know, it's those players that you need to stand up. And I think that Vipers have got a degree of strength in depth that no other team has. And
absolutely.
It's all about that. You know, can those second string players, you know, pull it out of the hat when they need to? Vipers have got, you know, some decent bowling. We saw Freya Davis bowl really well early doors, didn't we, Raf?
Did,
and that made
a
big difference.
Because absolutely. I think
Diamonds were chasing a big total, weren't they? And
well, everyone knew that the weather was coming at some point. It was just, you know, so for Diamonds, they'd chosen to field first and then they knew they needed to keep up with the DLS target, right? But with Freya Davies up top, and she bowled two maidens back to back, and that obviously put Diamonds under huge pressure. And then when they did eventually lose a wicket, then suddenly they're really under the kibosh because they haven't got enough runs on the board.
Yeah, no, lose a wicket early in DLS, and you know the target whacks up, and it was showing on the scoreboard, and it was being adjusted after every ball. And you know, to a certain extent, you want to see that as a batting team because you want to know where you need to be.
Yeah.
But the other side of that coin is that it can be really difficult to look at that and go,
very tough.
You know, a moment ago the target was 19, now it's suddenly shot up to 40 because we've lost a wicket, and we're nowhere near that. And the Diamonds did wind up chasing the game pretty much the whole way. They got quite close at one point. They got within 9 of the DLS. But, you know, then they lost a couple more wickets and then suddenly they were like 50 or 60 behind. And that's the point at which the umpires said, enough is enough.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, a solid win for the Vipers. And they're definitely going to be up there at the end of the season. You know, Stars and Vipers, for me, again, after these rounds of games this week, still going to be the teams to beat this year.
Interesting. Although Sunrisers also up there in contention, which is very interesting to see, isn't it? After having
Sunrisers did lose that game against Thunder, which I think they must have been targeting and hoping they'll be able to win that one. But Thunder just put on far too many runs, and you know that wasn't going to be a chaseable target. You know, Vipers would have struggled to chase 300 there, I think.
Exactly.
So you know that's going to happen, but you know. Mostly Sunrisers have, well, the two games they've won, they've taken advantage again of very poor batting. They haven't put pressure on their batting really. And you know, Grace Scrivens has been able to very much do game management, which of course, being you know, the sort of smart cookie that she is, she does very well. And she's just like, well, I'm under no pressure to go any particular rate here. I'm quite happy to noodle along at 2 or 3 and over, and because we're going to easily win the game.
Well, I'll return to Grey Scrivens in due course, Sid.
I'll probably return to Grey Scrivens a few times.
Do you think that having two semi-finals in the RHF this year makes a difference?
Yeah, I think that's it feels like that's going to be kind of a much bigger difference than it actually should be mathematically, because you've got four semi-finalists rather than three. But what it feels like to me is that when it's three semi-finalists, you're talking very much about the top of the table and how those three kind of pan out. And I think, you know, there's a good chance that you wind up with Vipers and the Stars running away with it and kind of fighting over that top spot, and maybe a couple of other teams fighting over third. But with fourth in play, it really could easily push down to, I mean, everyone apart from Blazers won a game already, could easily push down to leaving the seventh team being in contention for that last spot. And the other thing is, you don't really get much advantage for winning the table these days, you know. So this season, compared to last season, winning the table for Vipers was hugely important, straight through to the final. You're not straight through to a final this time. The big advantage, you get home semi-final if you win it, and you'll also get to play the fourth place team, which might be an advantage. But, you know, if they're Diamonds and they have a good day, it might not be an advantage to play that fourth place team. I think Diamonds will wind up in that top four, but it's going to be an interesting battle, because it is going to be the middle table really comes into play.
Yeah, I mean, Diamonds are obviously contending with something else, which is basically being told 3 days before the start of the season, you've got to think about moving 2 hours north to Durham, and the whole Diamonds collective is basically moving wholesale. That's very disruptive, actually, for that group of players, some of whom are quite young, many of whom are still living at home. It's not really something that I thought about before, but actually timing the announcement to come right before the start of the season was probably not very wise on the part of the ECB. And I did actually get to speak to Danny Hazel briefly yesterday at the end of the game. She's very much playing it with a straight bat at the moment in terms of Yorkshire versus Durham, which is absolutely fair enough, because for her, she's going to be the coach of one of those teams, but nobody quite knows what it is yet, which it is yet, least of all her.
She did say
the exact quote was, "I've tried to keep us focused on the cricket, but it is a very, very loud noise." And so those players are dealing with so much more than I think most of the other players in the other teams are having to do at the moment. And you just wonder to what extent that's going to have an ongoing impact on their performance, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was very interesting to listen to what Danny Hazel was saying. This was all on the record, so, you know, we can talk about this.
Yeah.
And the first interesting thing that she said for me was that, you know, she feels very much that duality within herself. Because she's obviously from the northeast, she's from Durham herself. She still lives in Durham, yet she definitely sees that she's played all her cricket for Yorkshire.
She played for Yorkshire since I was 18. That's a long time.
But the really key thing, and this is my second point, was that although she's got this kind of split personality, if you like, that didn't come out quite as I meant it. But you know
split,
what I mean?
Split loyalties.
She definitely sees Diamonds as a Yorkshire thing.
Yeah.
She considers herself as a Yorkshire cricketer at the moment. And, you know, we know that, you know, from a sort of legal perspective, that's not really right. That Durham, you know, are equal partners in theory in the whole Northern Diamonds enterprise. But clearly in Danny Hazel's head, she's Yorkshire. And, you know, so she was talking about, you know, it's going to be difficult because her kind of personal loyalties, having, you know, been born and spent her, you know, girlhood in Durham are one thing, but having her entire cricket life in Yorkshire gives her some other loyalties.
And all of her professional career as a coach, basically, at the Diamonds, which, as you say, she sees as Yorkshire. So I think, very, very interesting little conversation with her, definitely.
And it was very interesting, though, that we did try and get a little bit more out of her, but she did definitely, you know, I mean,
we tried to push her a bit, didn't we? But no, as I say, she played it very much with a straight bat, and good for her, because, the last thing that we want to happen is for somebody, for her to get the wrong person's backup and for us to potentially lose one of the best coaches that we have in the country. I'm not going to say the best, because obviously we've got Charlotte Edwards, but she's potentially the second best coach in women's cricket that we've got in England. And, you know, we need her for Project Darwin to be a success.
Absolutely.
So I thought that she handled a couple of tricky questions from yours truly quite well.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the Rachel Hayhoe Flint Trophy. But we know that later this week, Sid, that actually, moving on to thinking about the forthcoming internationals, the England squad to play Pakistan is going to be announced on Friday. As we understand it, the England players who are going to be in that squad have already been told, but we don't know. I think that's going to be really interesting. John Lewis has been making the selections, Sid, or has he?
Well, yeah, this is an interesting question, isn't it? Because there was an article last weekend in Fortune magazine, and it was about AI in sport.
Right.
It said it's talking about a company called Prospect AI that do sporting AI. The English women's cricket team works with Prospect to use AI to pick the right players for different opponents by simulating mock matches under thousands of scenarios. So, well, that's interesting. It says that AI is being used to select the England women's cricket team. Does this explain something, do we think, Raph?
Well, it's all a bit weird, isn't it? So I actually went to ChatGPT before we came on air, Sid, and I said to ChatGPT, who should open the bowling for England v Pakistan in May? ChatGPT says some contenders might include players like Zach Crawley, Rory Burns, or Dom Sibley.
Okay.
I don't know who they are. I was a bit cross at this point. So I said I meant for the women. So I hope that ChatGPT interpreted my tone there as being slightly irritated. And ChatGPT says that it should be Tammy Beaumont or Lauren Winfield Hill.
What, opening the bowling?
No, sorry, opening the batting, Sid. Oh, opening the batting.
Okay.
That
makes more sense, to be fair.
But it's still a little bit out of date, isn't it, ChatGPT? And also, you know, thinks that men's cricket is the default, which is very, very frustrating to have sexism baked into ChatGPT anyway.
It's just reflecting society, probably.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's very odd if they are using AI.
It's an interesting thing. I mean, I think that it's nonsense. I suspect that it's nonsense in two ways. I suspect that the England cricket team are not really using this thing in any kind of serious way, because I just can't see that John Lewis is sitting there going, you know, well, I'm not really qualified to make selections here. I'm just going to ask the computer and it can do it for me. You know, you don't get to be England coach by being the kind of person that is going to allow a computer to second guess you. And the other thing is, it just feels very much, I mean, I work professionally with, you know, big data and these kinds of technologies, and something feels a little bit off about the entire thing, particularly the thing that it says simulating thousands of matches. That's not right. If you need to simulate thousands of matches with an AI, then you're not actually achieving anything, because there's nothing that you can answer by simulating thousands of matches that you can't answer by simulating one match. However, simulating thousands of matches is the kind of thing that will sound good to someone that doesn't know what they're talking about. If you just say, well, we're simulating one match, people go, what, only one match? Oh, we're simulating thousands of matches. Ah, yeah, well, I'll buy that. I doubt that England have actually bought it. But I think it's marketing speak. I think the company possibly worked, you know, a little bit with them, and they're now kind of spinning this into.
Well, it's very interesting. Maybe we should attend the press conference on Friday and ask John Lewis whether he's been selecting the team based on AI.
Might just do that.
In terms of where we think that he might go with the selections, whether it's based on his own intuitions or the use of AI, I guess one of the interesting things will be to see the avenue they go down with the bowlers. And one thing is that there's a little bit of a conflict going on here between English conditions in May, which are going to be like nice green, especially with the weather we've been having,
lush
green tops, and great for. Well, probably a bit of swing bowling versus what they're likely to get in Bangladesh in late September or early October, whenever the World Cup actually is, because we still don't know the dates, which is going to be kind of dry heat, basically.
Having a chat with somebody at the Vipers game yesterday, and they were saying, you know, do England pick those three spinners and try and encourage the ground staff to prepare as dry a pitches as they can? I mean, looking out the window.
Good luck
with that. Yeah. But, you know, they can try and, you know, keep the pitches as dry as possible and select those three spinners that we think they're going to, or we know that they want to play in Bangladesh.
So just to be very clear, that's Sophie Eccleston, Sarah Glenn and Charlie Dean.
And all, you know, being in, you know, decent form with the ball.
Yeah.
So, you know, it makes sense. But on the other hand, if you're really picking for England conditions, You probably want some more swing bowling options in there. Yeah. But do even England have those swing bowling options at the moment? Or have they thrown all their chips in with Lauren Bell? It does feel a bit like that.
I mean, clearly Lauren Bell is going to be the one, the kind of one pace bowler that they're going to select. Mahika Gore is going to be doing exams in May, you would think. So she's not going to be available for any of this, I believe.
Doing her A-levels.
Who else? Freya Kemp, still injured. She's obviously been playing for Vipers and doing very well with the bat. But as we understand it, she's nowhere near back to bowling again. And so is potentially not going to be available for, well, definitely not against Pakistan, maybe not against New Zealand as well. Little bit of have to wait and see for the World Cup. Who else have they got?
Lauren Filer, obviously, but she's not a swing bowling option, it is a pace option.
Yeah.
So that's, and then, you know, I mean, but really, I guess that, again, looking forward to that World Cup, you know, what they're really interested in is can, you know, particularly, I think, Danny Gibson take on that role of, you know, offering enough overs to be able to ensure that you can keep Nat Sivar fit.
Yeah.
Because the other thing they don't want to do is wind up relying on Nat Sivar to bowl, you know, 10 overs in every game of an ODI series.
Yeah, especially when it's very hot.
Yeah, so lots of interesting questions for England. I think rather less questions around the batting there, Raf. I don't think we're not expecting any surprises.
No,
in the
so I think that the batting's going to look similar to how it did in New Zealand. But obviously, to some extent, they delayed the dilemma for themselves of whether or not they dropped Sophia Dunkley by Sarah Glenn getting that concussion. Glenn, obviously, now back playing for the Blaze, doesn't seem to have had any she's obviously had time off, but she's now recovered, so we'd expect her to be selected in that England 11, assuming they go down this route of three spinners, right? So you've got a bit of a thing of, do you have Dunkley in there? Do you have Beaumont in there down the order, assuming that you stick with Boucher and Wyatt as your top two, as your openers? Is there going to be a spot for Bess Heath? Is there going to be a spot for Grace Scriven, Sid? I did say I would return to her. Are we going to see her selected against Pakistan? Over to you.
I'd be really surprised. I think that we're not quite at the right point where we're bringing her in yet. If the series were the other way around, Raf, if it was the New Zealand first and then Pakistan in September, and there's a possibility...
No, Pakistan is in June, July. They're not playing internationals in September.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, that was my point. Right. If they were playing in September, then we'd go through the entire season in September. Of course, there are going to be some internationals in September against Ireland.
Well, they're scheduled.
In theory.
Yeah, they're on the ICC's Future Tours programme, but there's no announcement about dates or venues or anything like that. Ireland are meant to be hosting them.
Yeah, I mean, we know that Ireland are in a lot of financial difficulties at the moment. They've been cancelling men's games. Yeah. So, you know, presumably Ireland are, you know, striving to be able to kind of find a way to make these games happen from a financial perspective. But anyway, I think there's a chance that Scrivens might be involved in those, especially if England choose to send effectively a B team.
Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting. It's very close to the World Cup. So you could actually, and you could say, well, Ireland are not going to be the strongest opponent. So yeah, we will effectively send an England A team over to Ireland. Really interesting point. And at that point, Grace Scrivens maybe even is the captain, if Heather Knight will allow it, of that team. But I don't know. I don't really like the concept of sending an A team to play in World Cup qualifying matches. And that's why they kind of need to be played. And if there's any kind of forfeit on behalf of Ireland and they say we can't play them, then they forfeit those championship points automatically. So I don't really like that. But on the other hand, I don't understand how they're going to fit them in otherwise in that window, because England will want to get to Bangladesh a couple of weeks early and play some warm-ups, right?
Yeah, definitely, and acclimatise and get over their jet lag and all that stuff. So yeah, definitely.
I would imagine that Bess Heath is going to be in the squad to play against Pakistan, partly because she's sort of England's unofficial backup wicketkeeper at the moment.
She's almost the official backup wicketkeeper now.
Which isn't great, because she's obviously not been keeping
She didn't.
For
she didn't
the
keep
diamonds.
Wicket for the Diamonds again.
Anyway, so she will be in there, but I don't necessarily see her playing. Certainly not in the ODIs. Maybe she might feature in one or two of the T20s. So that's going to be interesting to see how that series unfolds. And Pakistan have been playing against West Indies of late, Sid. We haven't really been watching them too much, but we have seen a little bit of. There was a very exciting match whereby
it was an exciting T20. Yeah. The ODI has been less exciting. I've watched two of the games. Pakistan have not been good. I mean, West Ham, essentially, this series has been Pakistan against Hayley Matthews. If you look at the rankings of players, you know, in terms of the numbers of runs scored, in terms of the bowling, the economy rates, the wickets, it's Hayley Matthews. It's like Hayley Matthews is basically the key player in all this.
Right.
She's scored ridiculously more runs than anybody else in the entire series. I think she's taken more wickets than anybody else in the series, or possibly level, but she's bowling with more economy than anybody else.
Okay.
In terms of what we've learned about Pakistan, a couple of big things. The big thing is that their key player in the ODI series, I mean, they didn't have a great time, was Bismar Marouf, and she has just announced her retirement. Between the ODI series and the T20 series, she was scheduled to play in the T20 series, she was selected, but she was like, I don't have the energy for this. I don't have the energy to carry on through to the T20 World Cup. It's time for me to kind of, you know, pass on and let other people have their opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, which is a noble thing to say if she doesn't feel that, you know, almost that her heart's not in it anymore, or that she doesn't have the energy.
Yeah, she's raising a young child, isn't she?
Yeah.
Which is exhausting in and of itself.
But a big blow for Pakistan to, you know, lose one of their top players. You know, their other key player remains Nida Dar, who's 137 years old.
137?
Well, okay, she's only 37, but I mean, in cricketing terms, that's pretty much the same thing. I think that, you know, although Pakistan did give the West Indies a little bit of a scare in the first T20, you know, that was Hayley Matthews. I think Hayley Matthews got a two-ball duck. And at that point, you know, but if Hayley Matthews, you know, can even score 40 or 50 runs as another T20 today, then, you know, I think that's going to be the difference again. I think that Pakistan are not in a great place, to be honest, and it's probably a good time from England's perspective to be playing. I don't expect a repeat of the Sri Lanka situation where England end up losing the T20 series. I think that England really, really ought to win this one.
Right, well, let's see. And let's see who is in the squad. And let's see whether John Lewis is selecting it based on AI. We'll bring your reaction to that next week. But goodbye for now.
Bye-bye.